So, Arno's talk name is The Shortest Path to Going Within. She grew up in India and moved to Pittsburgh at some point, a decade ago? 15 years ago. And she saw a poster that she thought initially was a career goals group sort of thing. So she thought, oh, maybe I can figure out what I want to do with my career. And when she found out it was a spiritually oriented group, they went around and asked, "What do you want? Was it what do you want most out of life?
What's the goal of your
life? What's your goal of your life?" And she said, "Enlightenment." And Art always says he when he heard that answer, he almost fell out of his seat, shocked. So, in 2004, after about 5 years of conscious work with the group, Arnima had a breakthrough. And so, I think she's going to talk about the whole path leading up to that in her speech.
Shortest version.
So, Arnima is from India, and her family is a warrior, comes from a warrior caste. So, I find... I find her approach really interesting. She has a mix of sensible Indian advice and killer instinct and brutal honesty. So you'll definitely at the retreat she gave feedback and you could see she really just went straight through for the throat. So as over the last two retreats, she's given some pretty funny Indian advice that I want to talk about just briefly. For me, last November, she told me that I should get married because suffering ripens the fruit. And then something as simple as just finish what you start, which, you know, of course, it's not like cookie-cutter advice. It's based on the person. And she told a specific person that's unnamed to have a baby. So before her presentation, I asked Anima if there were any secrets she wanted to tell me before her speech, and I don't think I'm going to get this exactly right, but she said, "Nathan, there are basically two paths in life. One is the long hard path of integrity and what do you say, honesty, truth, and then there's the shortcut path of those like lying, cheating, something." Yeah. And she said, "I'm basically a lazy person, so I'm always looking for the shortest path." And so she got where she was wanting to go pretty quickly. And I think listening to her talk about her path is really valuable. So I'd like to welcome Anima. Ask her questions about her short path, yeah.
I've had like 8 versions of what I'm going to talk about today, and I threw out all. So, Eric started asking me like 3 months ago, what's your topic going to be? What are you going to talk about? So, finally, you know, when he twisted my arm enough, and he said, "You know, I just have one more day left, and you have to tell me by this time that what your topic is going to be." So I said, "Okay, it's going to be..." Then I thought about it. I said, what will get everybody's attention? So I thought, I'll say, shortest path to going within. But when I came back to it and I started thinking about it, it felt so absurd, you know, as if it's a destination somewhere within us, somewhere far away within us, that somebody else can, outsider can show you the path. It's like somebody trying to show you, Ramana Maharishi says that it's like somebody else trying to show you the way within your own house. So it just felt strange. I thought I'd bring it to your attention that how we are looking for a path outside or from somebody else to go within us. For me, I think my path got really clear. I was the path started when I realized how miserable I was. And then I was, I think, 16, I was projecting it out on parents, you know, everything outside. And to take my mind off of my immediate suffering, I you know, I started to meditate. I learned to meditate. I got introduced to meditation. But it was just like, I was going here and there, trying this meditation, that meditation. I really loved Osho meditation retreats. They had so much, I had so much fun there, like it was dancing, music, all really good music, you know, mystical music. Oh, I love those retreats. And I did that for like, till the time I came to Pittsburgh. And at that time also, you know, I on and off would go into, I would try Kundalini meditation, dynamics meditation. It was just a lot of fun. And then sitting quiet, ultimately you start to, the body learns to quiet down, and you realize, you know, you learn to sit in a posture and chant, and or concentrate on breath, or concentrate on something, or whatever, you know. So I was trying all these things, reading books, reading Osho, reading whatever I could lay my hands on. Vivekananda was one person I really was impressed with. That was my first serious attempt to meditate. His, do you guys know Vivekananda? So, yeah, so...
Say who?
Vivekananda.
Oh, Vivekananda.
Yeah. So his, but his path was very yoga, you know, I think it's called Raj Yoga. And so his path was very yoga. I tried that too. But he was, initially, I really got inspired by him. And he talks to young people, you know, 18, 16-year-old men especially. But Raj Yoga was, I was very impressed with that. But I think my path, really, I became sure of what I really want. And I think that's the major milestone in my whole search, was when I realized what I really, really wanted. And that was going to that particular meeting. I realized that was my whole purpose. And then reading Mr. Rose, and he talks about commitment, you know. It takes a while to really clear off what you really want. I think that's the hardest question that we need to answer. But once you know, actually we all know what we want, but somehow we take it, I don't understand why would somebody not be honest with themselves and not say what they want. If you want something, you know, it's not about somebody else, but we all hesitate, I think, to really word. It's like, something else will be taken away if you say what you really want. Then life is going to be one particular goal, and when you reach that goal, it will be finished or something like that. I don't know. But I think that was a major milestone, that just to realize what I really wanted. It was to end my suffering. You know, I had come to the point where I realized that no matter what I did outside of me, what I tried to get, or no more, none. It's just, you know, your patterns keep playing out that, this is not the reason, this is not the reason, this is being taken care of, I'm still miserable. And it just keeps playing out. And then you realize that once you start taking out the, you know, layers of this is not the reason, within I realized that I was really miserable because I felt separated. I felt a sense of separation, you know, incompletion. And that incompletion, I realized it cannot be, it's like, it's not because of anything outside of you. It's just within that constant feeling of this is not it, you know, just discomfort, anxiety, always that underlying state of life from the other side is hell. So it's like being in that dark room where there is no hope. Just what do? You realize that you are pretty desperate. A pretty desperate situation if you're really honest with yourself, you know, and nothing short of, if then you have to take somebody else's word for it, that nothing short of enlightenment or permanent answer, I really like Miss Rose, absolute. That was the first time I really thought of the word absolute. I had come across it in Indian philosophy and stuff, but really thought about what absolute would mean, you know, omnipresent, everything, anything, nothing. I had heard those terms before, but it never had got my attention that absolute is what is going to do the trick for me, or that was the solution for me. So that was, I think, just being clear of what I wanted was my first major people look for, you know, my major experience, or this is the experience that took me forward and stuff. I think my major milestone was just to be clear of what I really wanted. And then I just, then I had to think about what, the, well then, if I want this, how do I go about it? You know, I need to get this. Self-inquiry group to me, in my mind, didn't look like a spiritual path. It was more psychological. I'd come from a background of incense sticks and thinking, you know, sitting in a posture or going through a really ascetic life and, you know, being a good person, good fasting and, you know, going through all that stuff. And then you go, you know, when, and then you reach enlightenment in some lifetime when you've led, you know, so many lifetimes and being that person. So for me, that was the path in my mind, in the back of my mind, that was the spiritual path. But when I went to self-inquiry groups with art, it just felt the right place to be. You know, at least I could talk about, I could, you know, think about things that were important to me. Even thinking about things that are important to you, we don't get that much time. Life takes all our attention, you know. It all the time, it demands some action, reaction. It just, that's the nature of this life. It draws you out. The five senses, our desires, fears, it's always making us look outwards. And going to PSI meetings, I realized that was very, very valuable to me because that made me think for myself. I think that's the first time I started really thinking for myself. So, and just, little, you know, our Monday meetings were so valuable because questions like, are you a robot? That really stopped me in my tracks, you know, am I a robot? And then when you start to observe, you start to see how mechanical everything is, how mechanical your thinking is, how mechanical your actions, reactions are. And so, and then what does friendship mean to you, you know? So Monday meetings were very, very valuable. I think that I didn't see it like that time, that if it was spiritual or not. But if, as a person, as a human being, I think a lot of pretenses fell off. A lot of stuff, baggage, just going, you know, self-inquiry in my own way fell off. So then the next question came that what really is, when mind starts to get a little serious, you know, after you've done enough of baggage, cleaning, house cleaning stuff, then you start to think about what really is getting in the way. Then you realize that, you know, whatever it is out there you're trying to seek is not somewhere out there, you know, or somewhere within inside. To go within, you don't have to take, there is really no path, and there is really no goal as such, you know, because it's always there. Sean said that it's like a freight train. It's right there in your face all the time. It's closer than close. Those words just annoyed me, you know, because no matter what you do, Nisargadatta said, I'm that. What does it mean, you know? I'm that. How am I that? So my whole path became about, you know, what does it, how do I get myself out of the way? I had no doubt that it's there, it's that, everybody's saying it. So there must be something getting in the way. And then Pulyan's letter, we were doing accountability group, one of those, and Bob Sergal was also there at that time. And one of the letters, he says that ego is the slippery, he talks about all that. And then he says, Tani is what is hiding the sun. And that became my mantra. So I felt, how do I get this penny out of the way? That became my whole search, or my whole practice. How do you get this penny out of the way? So the penny, can you chop off your ego? Can you kill ego? Who will kill ego? Ego, you know, how do you kill ego? So, what do you do? How does ego get killed? It doesn't. So my whole, you know, my thinking went around that area. How do I get myself out of the way? What is this ego? You really start to look at what is it. And then I came to a realization that it's not, you know, personality had like, the, you know, first I lived in a state of crusts and troughs of emotions going up and down and all over the place. I had come to that flat state of emotions were pretty calm, you know, body was pretty calm, relationships outside world was pretty calm. So then you start to really, the where is ego, what is ego? Then I saw that this I, this the sense of I am doing, I am suffering, I am looking for enlightenment, that I is the slippery ego, you know, and it becomes very subtle. It's very hard to see that how subtle ego becomes, you know. So once I saw that it's ultimately, and I, at that point you just can't, I couldn't say that, okay, suffering is happening through me. I couldn't say that, or, you know, enlightenment will happen through me or something. I couldn't, that wasn't honest, because there was someone. That last, I realized that though most of the stuff had fallen off, but that sense of a doer doing thing was there. So that was my last obstacle or penny, and that was the penny that was really hiding the sun, and I saw through that. But nothing I could do about it. I said, this is what it is. So then eventually, it's when you finally find, I realize that it's like when the capitalist self appears, that final, that smaller self is, that's when you just, you realize it wasn't even there, however you want to word it. But the small I or ego remains till the very end. For me, it remained. So my path is very, it's just commonsensical, simple path. It's self-inquiry. I feel that is, it's the most, actually I feel the most straight or most right here, right now path would be surrender. You know, if I could just surrender, I tried that too. You know, if I could just surrender, I pretended, I prayed, I said I surrender, but you can't surrender. At least I couldn't surrender. So surrender would be the most straightest path, if somebody can figure that out, that I could. So path of self-inquiry to me is very simple. It starts with, you know, just being introspective. You start to look at, why do you do, what do you do? It leads to self-observation. Then you start to become a little more objective. Introspection is, you're really too much into it, you know. All the actions are you, and everything is about you. And so when you start to get a little distance from all the actions or stuff that's going on, is when the self-observation starts to happen. Initially, it's very active. You get involved in the activities, and then you become more and more passive within. You know, it's a passive observation which just goes on its own. So that was, I feel that's the true meditation. When you just are observe, you realize that you are just witnessing and observing what's going on. But there is an observer, there is the I. So I didn't kid myself that, oh, there is an observer. And I have a hard time thinking of there is consciousness, awareness, like that. So, anyway. So, but I think self-observation is, that's also the easier part of self-inquiry. Now the hard part comes, that's self-remembrance. At certain point comes in your self-observation that you realize that, you know, you are, whatever you are observing, where whatever you want to get to, absolute, it never gets your attention. It never comes into your attention. What gets your attention is all this stuff in your view, outside. The mind on its own doesn't start to contemplate of what that absolute is, you know, or what are you looking for? Oh, God. It's only so this self-remembrance, I think, is a very, very important aspect of self-inquiry. However, it just happens on its own, and it happens after you've done self-observation a long enough time that it gets your attention one fine day that, oh, how come my attention is never on self, never? never on self. It's always on the ego. Ego takes all your attention, everything. It's never on your capital S self. So it's somehow then an aspect of, you know, you start becoming conscious. You just become more mindful of the blank screen on which the movie happens. You just become more conscious of, you know, mindful of. You start getting really curious about where is this happening, or who am I? Question becomes important to you, because before that, who am I? Question wasn't. It just annoyed me. But the who am? That's the point. I think that self remembrance leads to the point to really wanting to know who am I. Who am I? Question is, you know, it seems so simple and it seems so this thing, but it's not an easy question, and mine doesn't get there. I didn't get there for the longest time, and once it gets there, that's when self-inquiry happens. You know, when mind really gets serious about, well, I really want to know who am I. You know, I can't kid myself anymore. I really want to not care about enlightenment also anymore. It doesn't want the end of suffering doesn't matter. You know, suffering, you realize that, you know, it's just suffering loses its importance. Life loses its importance as such, you know, or you lose the importance. You become indifferent to all these things. You become indifferent to enlightenment. You become indifferent to what will happen to you, if you'll come back, next life, this. You stop caring. And that's when I think capitalized self-inquiry happens. And that leads to self-inquiry, and I think just a simple question popped in my head. I think it led to it. Sean had this experience, Bob Segal had this experience, and so that really, you know, gave me a little hope. I got to the point of just do whatever, you know. But that had given me so much hope that, oh, Sean could do it. You should. Because he in one of his presentations, he had said that he doesn't sit and meditate anymore. And so I said, well, you know, I don't think so. And he doesn't talk. Right? So I had no hopes for Sean. So I didn't think he was even on, you know, looking for it anymore. But then, and he was somewhere down south, traveling, this and that. So, but it just blew my mind that Sean could do it. Bob Segal, I just felt it, you know, he, the way I heard him, he was higher up on the pedestal. And then Art said he had this realization, and that just took, you know, that just made me, oh my God, now I just become God. I can talk to God directly, you know. I can have my questions answered directly now. And so I at once wrote all these questions to Art, what is it? How do you go beyond mind? How do you cross the bridge of mind? My fancy questions. And then I'd asked him, and what does God really felt like, you know? So he gave this answer, he's neither male, he's neither female, he's not this, he's not that. Doesn't have a watch. Yeah. Yeah. And just, you know, one of those head-spinning answers. Then I said, I was just lying in bed, and at night, that period of night is very, very precious. I think when the body kind of cannot move around anymore, mind quietens down, all the chatter has, you know, is kind of dissipated. And then you start to notice your thoughts are just different from your mundane, mechanical thoughts. And the thought popped in my head that I really won't, you know, I really wonder what God feels like. And just then, there, it just felt like, you know, my top of my head opened into this vastness where all the creation and destruction happens. And I saw that this is where everything is happening. And this is where anima is getting created. And I said, oh my God, everything I can imagine really is true. All the entities are true. Bardos are true. Hell is true. Heaven is true. And everything you can imagine, extraterrestrial stuff is true. Galaxies are getting made here. Galaxies are getting sucked up here. This is where everything is falling into and falling out of. You know, this is Brahm. So, it just took one little thought of, that just pure self-inquiry for the self of self-inquiry. That's all it took, you know. So there is really nothing complicated, nothing glamorous, nothing, there's nothing unnatural or nothing. I don't know what the word, but it's very, very simple. It's very commonsensical. It's very practical path. It's not something out there that somebody else can tell you, or if somebody has a technique or a method, and they say that, I have found a way, and this is the path to it. Just run away from it, because really, you have to figure out your own path, and. That's my shortcut. Yeah, that's the. I feel it's the. To me, self-inquiry made sense, and before that, you finally know what it means when Nisargadatta says, "I'm that." You know that. You know absolute, and there you realize there is no more. You know that inner. Yearning or pain has gone. I don't get toothaches, pains and aches, and I don't get angry, or I don't spank my kids, or they don't irritate me. But that inner yearning, that inner constant state of imprisonment is not there, and it doesn't. It just disappears. But you don't become. I haven't become pre-consciousness. And if your foot hurts, it's your foot. And my awareness doesn't go out there, or all that stuff is not there. I'm a very thick person. I don't have much psychic. Stuff or intuition also, I didn't see it very much, though intuition must have come and gone, but I just, I need to know that what my creative mind is not creating and what is really real, I need reality, I need to see, I need to be able to touch, see, smell, with my five senses. These are my tools and apparatuses that I need to have proof with.
Considering the distinction between self-inquiry and self-remembrance, it's coming from traditional mysticism where you get a mantra, right? And the mantra is, it's you, the mantra, and God are all the same thing eventually. And it's like you're given the self-remembrance thing ahead of time. So I guess what I'm wondering is, in TAT methodology, what's the closest thing to do a mantra, like in between your breaths or something like that, or
what would be? There is no method. There is no that self-remembrance. I didn't see it actually, but yeah, the self self-remembrance would be to remember who's looking. Who is it who's looking out? And I just want to read something from Mr. Rose's. Writings that I thought would be helpful for everyone to remember. See, my eyes have become big now. But where I went to get glasses, they said it's $550 for this these glasses. So I said to hell with it. Next year when it gets weaker. So I have. have something from Walmart, but I forgot. So, I think I can read it. If I just squint them right in the right way, I can read it. Okay, I read it as a. So Mr. Rose is answering to somebody. I'm not going to read the whole. Somebody asked him a question. I'm a Catholic, and I have somehow fitted this into Catholic philosophy. And we are searching for God, for the ultimate reality, which is the same thing. So Mr. Rose answers, right. You see, I think that the Asiatic was 1,000 years ahead of us. You see, he had a direct mind system. He called it Zen. I talk a lot about Zen, but I did not reach my realization through Zen. I have repeated this in almost every talk I give. I reach it as a result of a tremendous amount of determination, regardless of the odds, to find the truth about myself, whatever I could, about myself, about my source, and who I was, where I was going. These are the three main questions that are the province of religion as well as of psychology. So, yeah, who I was and where I was going, you know. Yes. And also just, you know, commonsensical thinking, practical thinking. It's not about, seriously, it's what is the next step that you need to take? And just not, just being, you know, just accepting what you really, really want. Instead of beating about the bush that this and that and whatever. Now I have an exercise for you guys. I thought we'll get into a group of 4 people and think about what is my question, or if us questioning is my path or not, you know. But you know, I'd like you to go back and think about what really is your question and what is it that you're willing to give up for it, you know. So give it a serious thought. Sean had done this last year, but I thought it's an important question to ask yourself, like, what is my question and what am I willing to give for it? So if you guys can get into a group of 4 people and say it aloud and...
Later on in the session, the question became, what is the term of a person from the place? I was never so It must be. It seems like it's constantly. When you go back, you know, there's something that clicks. You notice something
Are you guys done?
Three nights.
Five more minutes. Now I want to know who's here. 5 more minutes. Some people need to get back.
It's like you just grab it. emerging what kinds of party you get from your war relationships with each other.
That would be a great experience.
There's a possibility that you could scale back from that perspective, just like you would in a church.
Curiosity, and just like,
thanks, everyone. Actually, so how many minutes do we have? Are you waiting into the minutes?
No, I'm not.
I want more attention. So anybody has any comments or want to say something, ask me anything? We have a few more minutes. What did it? This is a very interesting path that we get on. It's an adventure trip, one way. So, yeah. And, you know, real fun is figuring it out for yourself.
Fun.
Fun. Gurdjieff says the best chances for a householder who has two important things. One is practical thinking and self-discipline. So just two things that we need. So, yeah. If you say that you're going to meditate every day for a half an hour, I always struggle with that, you know. I say, okay, I'll meditate for, and then I forget. So you make a commitment, you say something, and then, become a person of integrity, as Tess says. And how do you measure integrity? By doing what you said you'd do. Would say that, you know, your inner guru is throwing rocks at you to get your attention, and we just don't pay attention. So noticing how can somebody else tell you what your next step should be? So when we start noticing what gets our attention next, like, for example, if you feel that, you know, shame is coming up for you over and over again, then you need to pay attention to what exactly, investigate like a scientist. That's Sean had told me once upon a time, you know, become a scientist, investigate, look at your body, physical body and the mental body, you know. So become a scientist, look at it, you know, investigate what exactly is shame, where is it coming from, you know. So, yeah, what gets your attention, just paying attention to what gets your attention. 1 minute left. Nathan is so.
Sorry.
I can't go beyond 1 minute.
What is this? The shortest path, right?
Yeah.
Quickest path.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for listening to me for 1 hour.